Hello and welcome to another episode of the RevVR podcast. I am your host, Reverend Kyle. It's been a while since I've done an episode like this, and usually these types of episodes are fairly popular with my listeners because some of the things we're going to talk about today are things that you may have thought to yourself, man, I wonder what if, I wonder maybe we should be doing this. Yes, that's right. We're talking about all the philosophical questions that we have when it comes to the VR, AR, and MR space. And so the way that this conversation started is a friend of mine on Facebook, a fan of the podcast, a follower, and just someone who likes to share their thoughts and ideas with me on a regular basis, approached me and said, hey, I think it's time that we do a podcast. And gosh darn it, let's go ahead and do it. So that's what this episode is. And so I have a, you know, maybe not a developer, not even like a current owner of all of the major hardware, but definitely a VR enthusiast and someone who's got a lot of thoughts that they want to share with us. I want to introduce you to my good friend, Lamidas Johnson. Lamidas, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm fantastic. So I guess just as a little precursor, you and I guess have been Facebook buddies now for a little while, I'd say.
Yeah, like 2 years, maybe.
I guess so. Yeah, you've shared some great ideas with me. You know, you like to throw things at me. There's so many people in the world that have great ideas, and it's always fun to hear them. And you know, I always get encouraged when I see, you know, the little ding, and I say, oh, it's Lamidas. What has he got today? And so it's really cool to talk to you about some of these things. We're just gonna kind of shoot through some of this stuff and share it with the community. It's not every day you get a chance to talk to a couple thousand people, is it?
Yeah, I am very excited to be on your show, Rev. It's mind blowing to be talking to you right now.
Well, it's mind blowing for me too. You know, I feel like there have been so many conversations that I've had with enthusiasts and people are just really excited about this technology. And afterwards, I think, man, that was a great conversation. I wish I had recorded that. Oh, I just need to start recording everything that I talk about anymore. You know, do you ever get that feeling like you should have just recorded that entire conversation?
All the time.
Man. So, okay. So, you know, when you approached me and said, hey, let's do a podcast, you know, you had a couple ideas and we're going to talk about some of these because see, some of these things are topics that I've heard from other people. And I just want to start out with this first one because it's one that I've heard several times in my place of business. And I've heard it from relatives and family and friends. And then you've brought it up as well is why can't I see myself in VR? I mean, you know, give me your thoughts. Why is it important, first of all, to see myself in VR?
It is very important because I think it's more of an interaction level when it comes to VR. If you can't see yourself, you really can't really interact with the virtual world like you would want to. And you really can't get a feel of where you are in that space without seeing yourself. I think it's going to be a very important thing in the future to see yourself in VR.
It's all about frame of reference. You know,
yes.
People get disoriented. It's a, you know, originally with the DK1 and with any type of mobile VR, you don't have that level of positional tracking. And so when you move your head too much in a direction where you don't have measurement, you get sick, you get disoriented. And, you know, lower field of view or, you know, lower screen resolution, lower frame rate, those are all things that get us sick or some people. I mean, I've grown my VR legs and I don't have to worry about it as much, but people who haven't done a lot of VR, that's a lot of times that's the first thing they say is, I can't see myself. I can't feel where I am. There's no sense of self. And, right. You know, I mean, you've done things where you're an avatar though, right?
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Does that work?
No, it really doesn't. I feel that I saw that on a TED talk. I forget who was hosting it, but it had to do with cinematic and the mix with VR. And they had, I forget the product, this way you strap it on your legs and you strap it onto your arms, and then you can see yourself in VR. But you are that avatar. You look down, you see something that's not you, but it still kind of works, but not really.
Yeah,
but
it's not enough.
I have to try it out myself.
Yeah, it's not enough. I mean, there's plenty of mocap suits. I mean, you know, things like STEM might provide us that. The Prio VR suits that should be coming out here soon, hopefully, knock on wood.
Yeah.
Give me my damn Prio suit. You know, those things are going to give us a better solution to control these avatars. But I don't know. I mean, you look down and you see a body, but it's not you.
Right. I call it reverse augmented VR. It's where I can't really explain it because it's just a theory of mine where you are in AR, but the world around you becomes a VR, but you can still see your actual self. Do you think that can be possible?
So having spent quite a bit of time with the HoloLens and putting HoloLens onto people who have never done any type of VR, or they have done VR and haven't had a good experience, and then they put on HoloLens and they suddenly have this sense of self because you can see the real world. HoloLens puts virtual stuff onto your real world. The value to that for most people is being able to see themselves, their environment. They see other people. They can make eye contact. There's a lot of value to having that level of awareness of self, you know, feeling that you are the person doing this. Now, what you're proposing is sort of a hybrid where in some manner, I don't know whether it's a scan or a camera, like a close up camera, something is giving a sense of, like, you an angled field of view or whatever. And then everything else is the VR.
Right.
Now that would be brilliant.
That would be awesome. I would never come out.
Do you think that that would be enough to give people that feeling of self? If they just look down, like, let's say there was I don't even know what it would have to be, maybe like a 15 or 20 degree, you know, like a cone around you, like a camera that just looks down, maybe even some sort of Kinect type of scenario that just looks down, or Leap Motion. I mean, let's consider what Leap Motion does. It gives you your hands. What if a leap was pointed down at your whole body? Would it need to be a video, or would it need to be a scan? I mean, would a scan be enough? Because at that point, you're just doing an avatar again.
Right. That's a good question. It would have to be recording every movement that you make. So I'm thinking a scan, maybe.
Yeah. That's the nice thing about these philosophical podcasts, the what if scenarios, is that we'll sit here, we'll yak about it, and we'll talk about the theoretical possibilities. And then somebody else will listen to this podcast and go, oh, I know how to do that. And then they'll produce it. And then they'll come back and they'll be like, look, Kyle, Lamidas, look what I created. It's exactly what you said.
Right. I thought I had that moment where I was thinking, I'm like, you have AR, right? You see the computer generated image that's over the real world. But what if you keep going? What if you add more layers upon layers across your field of view until everything becomes virtual and except you?
I think one of the limitations to that is going to be the room tracking. So HoloLens and most of the AR devices have a hard time tracking outside a certain range. I mean, these are just Kinect sensors, so they can go out a couple meters and then they stop. We need these sensors to be able to go beyond. We need to be able to take these things outside. Imagine going out into a big football field and, you know, big open plain area, and then just, like you said, build and build and build to the point where you don't even see the real world anymore. The only thing that you see in the real world is yourself, and everything else is all virtualized.
Right. That would be a lot of hard work to do. I can't even really think, because you would have to have something like the Void. You would have to have wireless VR, possibly a backpack to achieve that. That would be like amazing.
What do you think of those backpack computers? Do you think that that's like, I mean, would you wear a backpack computer to be able to do wireless VR?
I saw that they're making them now for VR. It depends on how heavy it is. If it's very heavy, I'm not going to really do it, but it's a solution.
It is. I mean, I struggle with the idea of positional tracking because where's the camera or right. Where, I mean, are you, I guess if you were wearing a Vive and the Lighthouse controllers were positioned wherever, that mm-hmm. the backpack computer might be a solution, but at that point you're lugging around this, like you said, this big heavy monster on your back, because they're not going to be light laptops. I can tell you that. we just got a laptop, an MSI Dominator Pro Dragon Series at work, big 17 inch. This thing is like 4 inches thick and it is heavy. And you put that thing in a backpack. Really? I wouldn't want to wear that. You know, I've already got this big monster thing on my head. I don't want another thing on my back. I'll end up looking like Quasimodo by the end of a couple months.
Yeah. I read a couple of articles where they have this, like, it's you hook the cords up from the VR headset to this like battery pack that's hooked onto your on your waist. It looks like a thick cell phone case on your belt. But I forget who makes, they were in the Kickstarter phase when I first found out about them. I cannot remember their name. I'm trying to look it up, but that was one possible solution for wireless. They said the latency wasn't there. They say it was good quality. I also read an article where this guy has made wireless VR, but he says it's going to be incorporated into one of the two major VR headsets later this year. We don't know which one or if that's still happening.
My thoughts on wireless. I mean, you're talking about sending a... Wow. Okay, so it's all about that latency. You're introducing latency where you're already hitting this peak of, wow, it's amazing. You know, the motion to photon, the ability to move your head and have the screen mirror that movement is already just right there. And at 90 frames per second, it's just okay. As soon as you introduce the idea of a wireless signal, imagine that wireless signal having to go. So you turn your head quickly to the left. The signal has to travel down through the cable over the wireless channel to the receiver. The receiver has to pick it up and say, okay, he moved to the left. So where is my next frame? And then to send that frame back wirelessly. I mean, you're introducing several milliseconds of latency, and some people might say, oh, it's not noticeable and it's worth it to be able to have a wireless whatever, but you're really never going to be truly wireless because you'll have a battery or you're going to have to constantly charge something. I mean, sure. I love the idea of wireless VR for a desktop PC, but I'm never going to quite leave the room. So right. Why not just have the cable take care of this and remove the latency, remove the need for a battery? I mean, what are you going to do with wireless VR? I guess it's not just your phone. You're doing that in smaller increments. I'm talking about desktop PC usage. What's the value of wireless VR?
That's a good question. You get to move around more. You're not really constricted to the space that you're given, that the wire, you know, lets you move in.
I mean, the wires are pretty long. The Rift. I was surprised. I'll tell you what. The Rift cable was about 3 feet longer than I thought it was going to be, and the Vive cable is ridiculously long. I mean, it is just huge, and
it has to be
right
around.
I mean, I was playing Hover Junkers the other day, and I thought, man, if I go any further, I know I'm going to pull this wire right out of the computer. No, I didn't. I didn't. I could have gone another 3 feet. I mean, the wire is just ridiculously long. I think I might get an extension cord, maybe just add another 2 or 3 feet to my Rift cable. The CV1 Rift cable, it's longer than I thought it was going to be, but it's still not quite as long as I want it, because I need some slack. I need it to be able to hang down at people's side, not pull on the back of their head when they get a little too far away. You know what I mean? I need some slack.
One question that just popped into my head, off topic. What's the best to you out of the two?
See, all right. So, the showdown. Which one's better, Rift versus Vive? I'll be honest with you, man. I mean, you know, we're recording this, day one of E3. There's been a lot of controversy right now over exclusivities, and he said this, and he said that, and she said this, and Vive versus Rift, and all the Vive people think that the Rift people are, you know, and vice versa. I just don't play the game. I don't choose one over the other, because I see value in both of them. As a developer...
Personal reference.
Well...
What do you prefer?
I spend more time in the Rift than I do in the Vive.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about.
But
I've been a fanboy of the Rift. I don't care how Vive is. I'm friends with numerous amount of people at Oculus, and I'm going to be with them. I was there from the beginning. I'm going to be there until the end.
But have you done the Vive? Have you tried the Vive?
I haven't.
See, it's hard to...
haven't.
I totally respect brand loyalty. I do. Yeah. I totally respect fanboyism and brand loyalty. And I get it. Because I'm like that with certain things. You know, trust me, there's certain... Like, people don't know this about me, but after years and years, you know, in my youth, I worked at office supply stores. I'm a pen snob. I have certain types of pens that I refuse to use. And people are like, a pen? Yeah, a freaking ink pen. Just, you know, I have certain ones that I will and will not use. And it's just, that's me. But so I understand brand reference or brand loyalty and personal preference and stuff. But having used the Vive and having used the Rift, there's value in both of them because you're doing different types of experiences. So, for example, earlier today, I had the opportunity to spend some time in VTime, which is the social platform, and it's cross-platform. It works on the Gear VR. It works on the Oculus Rift, and you can go in there and you talk to people, and you're basically sitting in whatever room they decide to sit in. You're in groups of, you know, four, and you talk to strangers, and that's what I did. I went in. I found three strangers, and we shared some pictures, and we sat on the space station and overlooking mountains and stuff, and we talked.
Sounds cool.
And it was really cool. And it occurred to me that I'm sitting in my nice comfy office chair in front of my computer, sipping on a cup of coffee. I'm kidding. It was a beer. And I'm talking to these people and I'm thinking to myself, the Vive would totally not be the right headset to be using right now.
Really?
It wouldn't be. The Vive would totally not be the right headset because the Vive doesn't actually work very well when I'm sitting in front of my computer because the lighthouse boxes can't see me. If I'm not standing up close to the middle of my room, lighthouse has a hard time seeing me because of where my controllers are. I could move the boxes, but I don't want to because I want to be able to use the... Now, see, at the other side of things, I would never want to play Hover Junkers in my VOD or in my Rift, because if I was playing Hover Junkers in my Rift, I guarantee you I would have already yanked the cord out of the back of the computer. It's just what? Not, there's just not enough room. There's not enough cord. But then at the same time, wouldn't it be nice to not have to wear a freaking headphones? Because the Vive doesn't come with built-in audio. So I have to wear headphones when I play it. And if I'm talking to somebody while I'm playing, I've got to have a pair with a boom mic so I can talk to. And with the Rift, I just stick it on the mic, the speakers, everything is just all built into one. So I got to be honest with you, man. I feel like they're both exactly what they need to be for the type of experiences that they're pushing.
Yeah, I plan on getting both myself, but after all that, you know, allegiance to Oculus, I do plan on getting both.
So tell us a little bit about your history with VR. I mean, how did you get the bug? You know, what bit you and got you passionate about it? And you know, what's your hardware? What stuff do you have now?
Okay, those are very simple questions. I experienced the Crescent Bay at CES last year, and that is it. I have no hardware. I have no other VR experience other than that. I first got into it when I found out about the Kickstarter back in 2012 of Oculus when they first started, and been with them ever since.
So you didn't own a DK1, didn't own a DK2, tried a prototype Crescent Bay, which would have been a pre-CV1 prototype. What about mobile? I mean, you know, do you have like cardboard? Do you have Gear VR or anything like that?
My wife has Gear VR, and I played it like 4 times out of the 4 or 5 months she's had it, but she won't share. As far as that goes, it's very good.
Do you know, if your wife has it, is she really passionate about using it? I mean, what is her experience with it? Because if she's not like a computer geek, if she's not like a super fanboy, what is she using it for? How does she talk about it?
She got it because I talk about VR a lot. That's all I pretty much talk about. I research, I do news, I look up VR stuff on a daily basis. I blog, not, I don't blog, but I post stuff on Reddit. And she knows this. I guess that she bought it to tease me. She went to CES this year. She tried the CV1. She liked it a lot. As far as her interest in it, I don't think she's all that interested as I am, but she likes the technology as far as it goes.
Which phone did it come with? Which phone did she get?
I think she has a 7 Edge.
Okay. Now, are you guys an Android family or an iPhone or a Fairweather? You know, do you switch back and forth? How do you define
mostly
yourself?
Android.
Mostly Android.
Yeah.
I have,
as a matter of fact, I take that back. She bought me, I don't know who makes it. It's not cardboard, but it's, I don't want to go get it right now, but it looks like the CV1, but you put your phone in it. And it does VR that way.
Okay, so it's a cardboard knockoff. I mean, there's a lot of plastic, right? And you know, as long as it's got decent lenses in it, those things can be really nice. I mean, prior to actually the very first VR headset that I ever had was the Dorovis Dive, which was actually in my possession just slightly before the. I have to take that back. I guess I did have the DK1. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Cardboard, I always call cardboard and its derivatives a gateway drug to VR.
Right.
You know, it's good to have those, and it's good to show off to people. You know, it's like, hey, check out what I can do. You know, look what your phone is capable of doing. But I'm always intrigued by hearing people's experiences. People who are not heavy gamers and who are not super freaky passionate about VR, I'm always curious to hear how they experience having headsets. So like, for example, today when I was talking to these guys in VTime, two of them were talking from Gear VRs with their respective Samsung phones. And I said, so, you know, what got you into this? Well, it was free with my phone, so I got it. And I said, well, okay, so what's your experience been? Well, I come on here and I talk to people and I hit on girls. Oh, okay. Well, what about you? Well, I come in here and I talk to people and I hit on guys. I'm like, okay. What about you? It's like, yeah, I just, you know, I come in here. Now, it's great because everybody's got a different reason why they're using it. And that's really what's intriguing to me is mainstream usage is really what's going to be important. I mean, it's not fair to ask me my opinion on stuff because I'm a developer and I've been like super freaky attached to all of this since the very beginning. Right. You know, you need to go and ask, you know, random Joe on the street everyday man and say, hey, what do you think about your VR stuff? You know, and so your wife's a good example. I mean, you know, would you say she uses it once a day, once a week, once a month, once in a blue moon?
It's a blue moon thing. I rarely see her on it. Mm. It's like I'm looking at it right now and it's the phone. It's the phone. If I had a phone like hers, I'd probably be on it all the time, but it's her phone, so I can't really get on it like that, like I would like to.
See, I constantly, at any time, if anybody ever sees me and meets me out in public, ask me, I'll show you my gear. I always have a Note 4 and an S6 in my pocket. I always have both of them in my pocket. I never know when you're going to need one or the other and which headset, which Gear VR people are going to have available. But I figure with a Note 4 and an S6 in my pocket all the time, I've got my bases covered. I can use any Innovator Edition or a Consumer Edition Gear VR if I have to. That's not really the reason why I carry them both. One's work and one's personal, but I like to tell people that. But I very rarely spend very much time in my Gear VR now since I have the desktop versions of the headsets. And I'm always curious, people who only have the Gear VR, if they're spending a lot of time in it. You know, I always said that mobile VR was going to be a big push to making it mainstream successful. And now that Samsung has basically given away so many Gear VRs.
They're free now.
Yeah, it's crazy. You just buy. Well, they should be. I mean, we're as much as the phones are.
They absolutely should be absolutely free.
Yeah.
For that much of money for a phone,
it's almost a sin, you know, to see how much these phones cost. It's crazy. Oh man. So, you know, talking about going in and talking to people, another topic of conversation that you brought up, and I think this is great, is, so let's say that, you know, you and I go in there and we're talking to each other on, VTime, you and your Gear VR and me and my Oculus Rift, and another person pops up and we'll just call her Susie. Susie pops up and we're like, hey, Susie, how's it going? And she's like, I'm fine. And between you and I, we start to think, what if Susie isn't really Susie? What if she's not real? What if she's an AI? What if she's a bot? So let's talk a little bit about this. What is that test called where you can choose, you can try to determine whether somebody is real or a robot?
Yes, the Turing test.
The Turing test, that's right. So, yes. Do you know much about this test? Because I'm a little kind of fuzzy on how it works. I know what its intention is, but I'm not really sure exactly how it works.
I'm not either. I just got it from the movie Ex Machina. I came up with a list of questions I would ask an AI in VR if I had that opportunity, you know?
Okay. So, basically, the Turing test and I believe Alan Turing came up with it. People are going to scream at me if I get everything wrong. So Alan Turing came up with, thank you, Wikipedia, with a test to decide whether or not, you know, these intelligent machines of computer intelligence, you know, artificial intelligence, is AI able to convince somebody that they're a real person? And so this test kind of asks these questions, but you have come up with your own questions, things right. that you would ask an avatar. Let's say, let's just keep it simple. We're in V time, we're in our HMDs and we're talking to Susie. What questions would you ask Susie?
My first question would be, Susie, can you see the people you are conversating with right now?
Okay, so
can you actually see the people that you are talking to? Because the person that is talking to you back can see you.
Okay.
Can you see us?
So let's say she says, yes, I can see you. How does she prove it? What would she have to tell you to convince her? For her to convince you that she really can see you.
My properties of my avatar, or my attributes, or I'm using the wrong word.
No, that's right.
I would say, Susie, if you can see me, how does my avatar look? And if she's correct, then I guess we move on to the next question.
Wouldn't she be able to possibly tap into your avatar's properties? So an avatar, you know, it says that you're wearing blue pants and a black shirt and you got, you know, green eyes and purple hair and wings and whatever else your avatar has. Wouldn't that be something that a machine might be able to analyze?
Possibly, but if my avatar is personalized by me and it's very, very specific, then I guess that would be a little bit difficult for her to kind of pick up on.
Okay, but so if it's not based out of a default group and selection of things that you can choose from,
right?
If you've personalized it, or if it's a scan of you, then okay, all right. So that seems like a good question. What else would you ask, Susie?
Oh, where did she come from? Can she see the world around her?
So it seems like you're asking her about the senses.
Yes. Mostly.
So, you know, what, you know, have you ever seen the movie Short Circuit?
I have. Okay. Good movie.
It's a great movie. It's one of the ones I grew up with as a kid. I watched it a gazillion times. It was one of the few VHS tapes that we had as a kid. You know, I always thought that that was interesting. You know, Steve Guttenberg's character is trying to decide whether or not Johnny Five is actually alive. And, right. You know, he's doing things like pouring coffee or pouring soup on a piece of paper, folding it in half, making it look like, you know, an ink blot test. And what does it look like? It's like, oh, it's like sodium glutamate and all this other. Okay, well, yeah, but it resembles butterfly leaf, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, wow. You know, the ability to see beyond something. So, you know, if I ask Susie, you know, where are you? What room are you in? What, you know, what is your environment? How do you feel? You know, I think these are the kind of questions that we would have to ask.
How did you come into being existing? How are you existing right now? Who made you?
Exactly. But now think about how rude those questions are to ask somebody in a chat room. I mean, have you ever asked anybody any of those questions before?
No, it would give me a little bit more insight on Susie if she depending on the answer she gave me.
Right. So let's say, you know, what would prompt you to suspect that somebody would, because these are all questions that I think are great. I think they're the perfect kind of questions to ask if you suspected somebody was an actual AI.
You tried the bot on the bot thing, right? I forget her name. Eve.
Is that the there's been a several online bots where you can talk to, you know, chat with them,
right?
And yeah, and they've even had them where the two AIs have chatted with each other.
Yeah, their conversations are not normal,
right?
Like their speech is not really human. It's very, you know, random, just random things that they say that makes them come off to us humans, letting us know that they are robots and AI.
The difficulty with the way people are nowadays, and I shouldn't say nowadays, it's probably always been this way, is that there are just crazy people who say really weird stuff. I've been in chat rooms before where I'm like, did you just make that comment? What would prompt somebody to say something so absurd? And it crosses your mind, what if they're not real? What if this is a bot? What if this is an AI? But then you start to think to yourself, do I really want to be the guy that walks up and says, hey, would you mind submitting yourself to some Turing test questions?
Right. Then it all spawns from I guess the possibility of you've seen Herc, right?
Her. Yeah, with Joaquin Phoenix, and he falls in love with his operating system, which is ridiculous.
And she's AI, right. Correct me if I'm wrong, right?
Yeah.
So if we have an AI in VR, then I guess that would really that really sparked up my interest, because I'm a big fan of Elon Musk, but he really believes that the world we're living in is basically just a giant simulation.
I really hope he doesn't really think that.
I think that way, not exactly like Matrix style, but I do feel that this universe is kind of sort of simulated. Not simulated, but I think we're all, I don't know.
No, I get it, man. You know, when you think about all the different, and again, philosophical podcast people, when you think about it, when you stop to think about all the different things, I mean, I remember the first time I watched The Matrix, it really screwed with my head. I'm like, whoa, what if we really are in some sort of like simulation? I mean, there are rules that the universe abides by. So yeah, I mean, sometimes you do feel like, you know, this whole universe is just fake. I mean, I don't know. I think it's kind of strange though for Elon Musk to say, yeah, this is we're all living in a simulation. But who knows? I mean,
I came across a video where scientists have determined that that space and the universe is computer code. Like everything in this universe is code. I really didn't understood what that meant, but I kind of do now. As far as when people say stuff is this world is a computer simulation, and then I hear scientists saying that the universe is actually computer code, then that kind of changes my mind on things a little bit, you know?
If you watch movies like Contact and things like, or even, you know, we'll go to the absurd Independence Day, you know, people always said, well, how in the hell did they write a virus for an alien spaceship in Independence Day? You know, how in the world did Jeff Goldblum's character do that? Well,
right.
Math is the universal language in the universe. There are two ways in order for something to exist, either on or off. It either exists or it doesn't, a positive or a negative. The universe understands that. But that's also a bit of code. So a bit of code is either a one or a zero. It's either on or it's off. It's a switch. And that's the universal language. Well, that's why it's universal. It's the universal language of the universe. Everything is either zero or one. So to kind of bring it all back together, there might be a scenario where you're in VR and you have to question whether everybody else there with you is real.
Right. It's going to be, I can't say in this century or this decade, it's gonna happen, because this technology is only gonna get better and better. It's just gonna get better and better to a point where we can't, or the people of the future can't determine what's real or not when they're there in VR, because it's just, like I said, gonna get better and better. Moore's Law in effect, you know.
I had somebody tell me recently that the term VR native, the term VR native is people who will never know a world without VR. So, you know, my youngest child is 5 years old. She may never remember a world without VR existing.
Exactly.
There is the possibility that there are some people that will be born in the future that will, and again, this might be absurd, and we're talking about a long ways down the road,
right?
Not next year, but there will be a point, possibly, where somebody is literally born into VR
and that's, never knows
the real world.
That's exactly what I was going to say next. We put a newborn with goggles on and see how it develops, grows up in an artificial reality.
You might think it sounds cruel, but there's a possibility that that will be the reality someday.
I'm pretty sure some mad scientist is going to cook that up one day.
Well,
me and you already cooked it up in our heads. There's no doubt that somebody's going to actually do this.
You know, the fun part about these types of conversations and why I was really excited about doing this podcast is because I know that these are thoughts, you know, you and I are not alone in having these thoughts or even having these conversations. You know, these are the kind of conversations that you sit around at 3 a.m. with all your college buddies at a coffee shop and like, dude, what if, you know,
I have this, what if you have a whole people's whole houses are going to be catering to their VR needs. Can you picture that?
I can. I had somebody tell me once that they thought that the houses of the future would be very plain. And everything would just be a solid color, you know, white or off-white or some, you know, something trackable, maybe a pattern of some sort. And you wouldn't put art on the wall and you wouldn't have colors anywhere because everything would be augmented through whatever goggles you have on.
Right. They're going to build houses around virtual reality technology. When they're both going to come together as one.
Think of the possibility of not needing to own a television. Or a radio or anything because everything is built into your head.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that's what happened.
Imagine an entire industry, the television manufacturing industry, just one day, poof, it's gone because there's no need for it anymore because everybody's wearing headsets.
Yeah, that's what Palmer said. He said, I agree with him.
Cell phones, same thing. You wouldn't need it because it would be built into your headset. The possibilities are endless, but you know, like I was saying, these conversations are so much fun because there are people that are going to listen to this and go, man, I was just thinking that the other day. This is so cool to hear people talk about. These are the things that I was thinking about. And it's great because it just means that, you know, we are the dreamers. We are the makers of dreams. You know, we are the people who have to be visionaries and think about this stuff and go, what if, and then make it real, or in this case, I guess make it virtual. But still, you know, it's definitely something that we have to, jump into and really, you know, if we stop questioning where this could go, then we're going to stifle it, and then it'll just end up being what some people think it is. It's just a screen in your head, and it'll go away. It's a fad.
Yeah. No, this is definitely here to stay. It's just going to get, it's going to get better and worse at the same time. It's going to get better because this technology is so much useful as far as on a different level, like you said, cell phones, TVs, thing in the past. It's going to be hurtful in a way that we will be dependent on them like we are now, but even more so, I think. That's just my opinion.
We are very dependent on our technology.
Yes, we are.
I mean, I don't know about you, but I mean, the first thing I do in the morning, I wake up, I roll over, I put my glasses on, and grab my cell phone.
Don't we all?
Yeah. I mean, I need my eyes and I need my hardware. That's,
It tells you what time it is. It tells you who texted you last night. It tells you what time you have to get up, alarms and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I had the unfortunate event of I had to reset my Note 4, which is my primary phone, my personal phone. I had to reset it. It was just, there was all sorts of stuff wrong with it. And I thought, okay, nice refresh. I'll reset it back to factory standards, reformat, get everything off it, dumped all my pictures, videos, and everything. All right, fresh new Note 4, just like it came out of the box. But stupid me didn't set my alarms, didn't attach all my right accounts to it. I'm missing, you know, and I'm the kind of guy that if I don't check my email one day,
Right.
I've got hundreds of them sitting there waiting for me to address.
Really?
And all of a sudden I'm like, man, this is, how weird is this? What a quiet day. I haven't gotten a single email all day. This is great, man. And all of a sudden it dawned on me. I'm like, oh shoot. I forgot to put my email account in here. Oh no.
It's a big time.
Yep. 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 So, you know, but that's, hey, we rely on our tech. It's,
yeah, we do.
Yeah.
I am going to jump off subject a little bit. I am going to tell you what I am most excited about once I get my Rift.
Go for it.
Music.
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 Okay.
I'm going to have my personal playlist playing every game that I play. It's like necessary. I don't need anything else but my music and my VR. While I'm in VR, my music and while I'm in VR is just going to be as like I fantasize it before I go to sleep at night. It's going to be pretty sweet.
So you're the kind of person that probably has your own kind of, I guess, personal soundtrack.
I do.
Yeah.
My personal life soundtrack.
Yeah. So you're the guy that I see who has the earbuds in all the time, everywhere you go.
Yeah, 100%. I've got a collection of earbuds I never leave home without. You've seen Guardians of the Galaxy, yes?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I like the scene where he's, when it first comes on and he puts on his music and he has the terrain of this alien world turn into AR and he's walking around with his music playing and dancing around and it's, the whole world is like, yeah, I thought that was very cool. That's kind of what I envision, you know, when I think about that. It's just awesome.
You know, it's funny. I never really understood the concept of needing music playing in the background the whole time. When I was younger, and again, I worked retail for a number of years, there was always that music playing. And it was always just really bad, crappy, whatever top 40 was, you know. Or it was, you know, Muzak version of good songs and you're like, ah, man, you know, so I learned to tune it out when I was younger, to just tune out whatever was playing at all the stores. And, you know, just recently, at work, one of my coworkers has, dumped Pandora, on his computer. He's got a Bluetooth, speaker system and he'll be playing music and it's always just, you know, smooth jazz or swing music or, you know, Frank Sinatra, or he'll get some oldies or, you know, 70s or, you know, a little funk here, a little this there and, you know, hard rock. And he changes it up every day. And I never really realized how cool that could be to just have that playing in the background. You know, here I am jumping through Unity and I'm dumping assets in and I'm trying out different scripts and stuff. And the whole time there's just music playing. And yeah, that's, it's something I appreciate now that I didn't when I was younger. And so I get exactly what you're saying. My only question to you though is, what if you're playing a game that has its own soundtrack?
That's a good question.
I mean, do you turn it down and just turn your stuff up?
I have to turn it down or ignore that soundtrack because I need my music. Not only that, I need my music to be three-dimensional. Like, I saw it was an Oculus development. It was at their Kinect. And this guy was talking about the importance of 3D in VR, and he says, I forget his name. He has long hair, I think, if I remember the video correctly. He says he listens to all his music three-dimensional while in VR. So he takes his music and converts it to three-dimensional. So he has his own three-dimensional music in VR. I want to do that.
I kind of feel like I've played some games, Minecraft, maybe Lucky's Tale, some things in VR where I wasn't exactly impressed with the soundtrack, you know? And it would be nice to have been able to kind of inject my own playlist. I mean, I've got certain tastes. I like most music. There are certain genres that are not my favorite, but I could listen to mostly anything. But there are certain soundtracks of certain games that just don't work for me. And when I hear some of these soundtracks, I don't know. And I gotta immediately go in and try to turn that crap off. I feel like that needs to be something, and not just in VR, but just everywhere. You know, let me choose my own soundtrack. Right. I like that idea. I think that that's something that developers need to start thinking about.
Yeah, I thought about that. Just upload your own playlist and have it just play in any game that you're playing.
I feel like there have been some titles that have allowed that, but it's very unique and very few and far between. I feel like that's something that should be done a lot more. Developers, get on that, guys. Give us the ability to put our own soundtracks in. I
want to be riding down the street in VR and Grand Theft Auto and be listening to my playlist in the radio when I'm driving my car.
There you go. Exactly. Or a podcast. You could listen to a podcast while you're playing a game. Exactly.
Listen to a rev when you're in VR. That'd be awesome.
That's right. That's totally awesome. Well, Lamidus, what else? I mean, I feel like we've done a great justice to the VR community to give them this philosophical conversation, chock full of wonderful ideas, things to get the juices flowing. Maybe some developer out there will run with one of our ideas and make the world a better place.
Google is going to take over virtual reality as we know it in the future.
You think so?
I think once they have Google Maps and they turn... Like how you can go to any place, any address in Google Maps, you type an address, you can go to that place in Google Maps. Once we have that in VR, where you can go to any street, any place in the world in VR with Google, because of the Google Maps and that technology mixed together with VR, Google is pretty much going to take over as far as seeing stuff around the world that you probably won't be able to see. Google's going to take that over.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that. I really do. You know, I'm a huge advocate for Android and everything that it's done. You know, also a big fan of mobile VR. And so when I hear that Google is putting more money, time, and investment into making VR bigger, faster, better, stronger... Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that. I think that there's going to be certain areas where Google is going to shine and give us things that might seem mundane to most people, but are going to be critical. I mean, imagine what VR and AR and MR are going to do to, you know, things like GPS, giving, exactly. You know, I mean, it's very obvious, I think, to most people that type of thing is going to be down the road. You're going to look through your windshield and there's going to be a giant green arrow that's going to point. It's like, turn here or go right. Down this way, or you're going too fast, or there's a cop chasing you. You know, that kind of stuff is going to happen. It's very obvious. I mean, I think we can all see that. And you're probably right. Google is probably going to be the one to bring that to us.
Yeah, that's just my final thought for that.
Hey, it's a good way. I love it. It's a great way to end this. So, all right. Well, you know, I know, Lamidus, you've got some things that you're working on. You know, you haven't exactly gotten yourself a full-fledged headset yet, but, you know, you're working on that, and who knows what you'll develop.
I'm afraid to get them. I told my wife, I said, the first thing I'm going to do is you're not going to see me for a whole 24 hours. Once I get my headset, I'm going to be in Minecraft building all day long in VR.
Yeah, watch out for that time dilation, man. You'll be in VR for like 20 minutes and come out, and it's like a week later.
I know. I planned on staying in for a day and ends up being two. Yeah.
I don't want to hear on the news that you were the first person to die in VR. Don't do that to me, man.
I might be. I just might be. I call myself the pre-addict for VR. So I'm definitely getting them, but I'm scared of all the time I'm going to be spending in there.
Well, you know, it's it's valuable time, you know, time that you spend in VR, it's valuable. So, you know, if you do end up spending large amounts of time, you know, just moderation, just make sure you sleep, make sure you eat, make sure you bathe, and everything will be fine. Just,
ooh, I don't need any of that. All I need is my VR headset.
Oh boy.
I don't need to eat. I'm training my body not to eat as much anymore. Well, my wife's like, well, you don't eat anymore. You don't eat as much anymore. I'm like, hey, this is training. I don't need to eat anymore. I'm going to be in VR.
You'll eat some lamb chops in Minecraft and you'll be fine.
Right.
Oh, man. Right. Well, yeah. Lamidus will be the guy in the news. You guys just wait. You know, my listeners will be like, oh, we're going to hear about him. He's going to be found, hadn't eaten, all emaciated. You know, you'll be like 80 pounds and you know, bones showing and. Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah, like that one picture we all know in the community with the guy sitting on the bed and he's curled up in the corner.
Yep.
The VR headset on.
Yep, that's the wallpaper on my computer at work.
Yep. That's my future.
Yep. I think that's a lot of our futures. Oh wow. Okay, so cool. So this has been a wonderful philosophical conversation, and like I said, I think there's going to be a lot of good feedback from this. People are like, "Oh, I totally just had that conversation with a buddy of mine." And yeah, it's good to see that that there are people out in cyberspace that are thinking about these things. I mean, here you are. You don't even have your own official headset, and here you are thinking about all this wonderful stuff and, you know, an advocate and an evangelist for VR. And, you know, the community definitely needs folks like you as well. So, thanks for coming on and having this conversation with us. Like I said, you know, Lamidus, you've got some things that you're working on that'll come down the road. So be on the lookout. I'll try to help you whore out your products as they get closer to reality. And so we'll be hearing more from you in the future, I'm sure.
Yes, sir. You definitely will. I really like that term, whoring. That's yes, I will definitely put you to good use, Kyle. That would be awesome.
Fantastic. Well, that's what I'm here for, or at least that's how it feels sometimes. All right, Lamidus. Well, thank you for being a great guest on the show. This was a really fun conversation. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Don't thank me. I'm thanking you. Thank you for having me, man. This has been my dream come true. This has gone not the way I planned. I'm still very just sitting here shaking, literally. Still. We talked this whole time. I'm still nervous.
It was such a great flowing conversation though, man. It was just wonderful. See, that's what the RevVR podcast is all about. You don't have to be anybody special. You don't have to be anybody in particular. It's just two guys or girls talking about VR, just having a good chat. That's all it is. That's all it is. So, as usual, you know, maybe, hey, you want to be, to all the listeners out there, if you want to be the person sitting in, Lamidus's chair and talking to Reverend Kyle, reach out to me. You can find me in all the normal places out on, Twitter at Reverend KJR, or you can find me on Facebook, Reverend KJR, or you can email me, ReverendKJR@gmail.com. Now that my phone is back up and running and the email is connected, I'll actually be able to respond. But don't be too disappointed if you don't hear from me right away. I do get billions of emails every week. That's a little exaggerated. I want to hear from you. And maybe you too can be nervous and excited to be talking to Reverend Kyle on a wonderful philosophical podcast. All right, Lamidus. Enjoy your time in the metaverse, man. I'll talk to you again.
All right. Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And thank you all very much for listening.